It's a privilege to be with you again today. I was here twice back in 2012, had the privilege of speaking to this congregation. A little about myself, I pastored for 41 years, started in the Idaho Conference. Most of my years were in the Oregon Conference. And from 2001 to 2010, I pastored here in the Upper Columbia, Pendleton, Pilot Rock, Blue Mountain. And I'm enjoying my retirement. I'd have retired earlier if I'd have known it was so nice. No, I don't know if I would have. I found pastoring very, very worthwhile and very, very wonderful. One of the Psalms, or Proverbs, actually says, death and life are in the power of the tongue. The most deadly member in the human body is really the tongue. Why is that so? Because you can stick it out at somebody? Remember doing that as a kid? Or because you can lick somebody? No, it's because the words that the tongue can form, that it can be so deadly. There's power in words. Do you believe that? Then you don't believe that childhood quip that says, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. We know, of course, there's power in God's words. The psalmist declares, by the word of the Lord were the heavens made and all the host of them by the breath of his mouth. He spoke and it was done, and he commanded and it stood fast. When we understand that, we can understand better these words from the servant of the Lord who wrote in volume 6 of the Testimonies, the word of the living God is not merely written, but spoken. The Bible is God's voice speaking to us just as surely as though we could hear it with our ears. If we realized this, with what awe we would open God's word and with what earnestness would we search its precepts. The reading and contemplation of the scriptures would be regarded as an audience with the infinite one. But I'm here to tell you this morning, there is power in your words as well. And that's what James is trying to tell us. The brother of Jesus, who wrote these words for us in the third chapter of his epistle. And I'd like to have you take a notice with me of James chapter 3. That'll be our speaking portion for today. And James has organized this very well for a preacher. You know, a sermon is basically composed of 3 points, and then under each of those 3 points, you have some illustrations or something to prove those 3 points. And he does that here in James. He makes it very easy for an expository sermon. First of all, we read in James 3, verse 2, "For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word," and that's with our tongues, "the same is a perfect man and able to bridle the whole body." If you can control your tongue, James is saying, you'll be able to control your whole body. You'd be a perfect one, but none of us are like that. And then he illustrates this point, and the point of this sermon, these verses are that the tongue has power to direct. And he uses as an illustration 2 things. "Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we can turn the whole body." I don't know how many of you are horsemen, but you know, if you're riding a horse, if you pull the reins one way, the horse will turn that way. Pull it the other, it'll go the other way. He says the tongue can do that. Our words can do that. And then as another illustration, he says, "Also the ships, which though they be so great," and it amazes me, some of these huge ships that are navigating the ocean that are so huge, weighing hundreds of tons, how can they even float, you wonder? And it's such a great big ship, and it takes a, well, for those big ships, it's not really a little rudder. It's a huge rudder. But that's small compared to the rest of the ship, and it can direct, it can steer that ship wherever it needs to go. They are, even though they're driven with fierce winds, yet they're turned about with a very small helm, it says in King James, but that's really rudder, whithersoever the governor listeth. So the tongue has great power for, first of all, direct. Our tongues can affect the lives of others. Did you know that? Things that we say to our kids, things that we say to our neighbors, things that we say to anybody has a tremendous influence and power. You remember it even affects our own lives, the direction our own lives takes by the words that we use. Do you remember when the Jewish leaders, by their words, they implied that, you know, Jesus, he was no king when he was born, and they would not believe. Even though he worked powerful miracles, the words they first uttered in disbelief kept them from accepting Jesus indeed as the Messiah. Then the second point that James makes in verse 5, even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it's set on the fires of hell. So first of all, James says, our tongue, it can start a fire. And talk about conflagrations. It's just amazing. You've been talking about these California fires, and you've seen the devastation that the fire can cause in these residents where there's just nothing. Overturned cars. I mean, when the tanks exploded, pickups turned upside down, cars turned upside down when they exploded, and nothing left hardly at all. And the sheriff, who was describing what a challenge they were finding identifying people that they find, just ashes, many of them, just bones, and maybe a little metal piece that they had in their bone or in their knee or in their hip. They used that to identify who it was that lived in that place. Terrible what the tongue can do. So James says here, secondly, after the tongue has power to direct, he says our tongue has power to destroy. And thus we see it with fires. But then he goes on, makes three points here actually under this point. For every kind of beast and of birds and serpents and of things in the sea is tamed. And it's been tamed by mankind. But the tongue no man can tame. So he says, we can tame lions. Have you heard the story of little Tyke? That's a story that has just totally amazed me. Over in Western Washington, a family had a kind of a zoo of all kinds of exotic animals. And they were called one morning to see if they would take this little lion cub. The mother, when she gave birth to him, she would crunch him in her teeth and kill him. And the fourth one that was born that came out, why, she bit it and then threw it against the cage, and it landed close to the caretaker there, and he grabbed it before she could kill it, and it broke its leg. But they called this family to see if they would take the lion, and they called it Little Tyke, and it grew. It was a vegetarian lion. I mean, can you believe it? Do you remember, have any of you read that story? You need to go to the Adventist Book Center and find that book called Little Tyke and read it. It gives us a picture of what God really has in store for us in heaven. But it says we can tame lions, we can tame elephants, can tame tigers, but you can't tame the tongue. Nobody's been able to do that. Then he goes on to say, in the last part of that verse, it is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. So there's a third point he makes under that, that the tongue has power to destroy. It's like a poison. And you all know what poison can do. It works quietly and insidiously in the body, but it's very deadly. The Bible gives us a lot of warnings about our tongues, and many of them come from the wise one, Solomon himself. Back in 1 Kings chapter 4, it tells about Solomon. His wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the East. In verse 32, he spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. Now, in the book of Proverbs, we actually have 275 of those 3,000 proverbs that he wrote. I would like to be able to read all the rest of those, wouldn't you? And he wrote 1,005 songs. We have three in the book of Psalms. I'd like to be able to hear and read about some of those songs that Solomon wrote. But he talks a lot about an evil tongue in the book of Proverbs. And out of the 375, I'd like to share 20 with you this morning. First of all, he talks about a lying tongue. A lying tongue. Some examples of that are in chapter 12, verse 19 and verse 22. The lip of truth shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. And then lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight. Keep that word in mind, because that'll come into our next point. Second kind of tongue he talks about in Proverbs is a talebearer, a gossiping tongue. And we find the word talebearer a number of times in Proverbs. In such a Proverbs as this, the words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. That's 18 verse 8. Where no wood is, the fire goes out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceases. That's 16 verse 20. And there are some modern proverbs that I think we're aware of about gossip. Will Rogers said the only time people dislike gossip is when the gossip is about them. But he also said, I never met a man I didn't like. What a challenge that is for us as Christians. Another proverb by Pascal, I hold it to be a fact that if all persons knew what each said of the other, there would not be four friends in the whole world. And then this last one, which was kind of new to my thinking, it's gossip, whether the story is true or false. I used to think gossip is only, you know, false things that go around, but even truth that we spread can be gossip. Then the third kind of evil tongue that Solomon talks about is a loose tongue. And I imagine he's talking about a tongue that talks too much. And there's a few points that he makes about that. A loose tongue often gets its owner into a tight place. That's 12 verse 13. Or a loose tongue can also be one that talks too soon, before you hear the whole thing out. And in chapter 18, verse 17, it says, he that answers a matter before he hears it, it's folly to him and shame to him. I like the way the Living Bible translates this one. It says, any story sounds true until someone tells the other side and sets the record straight. Then we have some modern proverbs about loose tongues. Think twice before you speak, especially if you intend to say what you think. Good advice. Put your brain into gear before you put your mouth into action. Another good advice. Thinking before speaking is the preventive of foot and mouth disease. So we're acquainted with all of these modern proverbs about the loose tongue. Then Solomon talks about a fourth kind of evil tongue, a flattering tongue. A lying tongue hates those that are afflicted by it, and a flattering mouth works ruin. That's 26, verse 28. Another one, he that goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, meddle not with him that flatters with his lips. That's Proverbs 28:19. And there's a modern proverb about flattery. It said flattery is a lot like mouthwash. It tastes good and it feels good, but you're not supposed to swallow it. Then he talks about a criticizing tongue. There is that speaks like the piercing of a sword, but the tongue of the wise is health. Proverbs 12:18. I remember reading about two taxidermists who had gone on vacation together, and they were visiting a quaint little country town. And they were walking down its streets, looking into the shop windows, and they came across another taxidermy shop. And as they stood in front looking in the window at this, some of the displays in the window, they saw this stuffed owl. And they stood there looking at it, and they said, "It doesn't look right. He didn't do a very good job on that. The beak isn't quite right. And the eyes, they don't look quite right. And the feathers, they really don't look real. And did a feral, terrible job on the feet." And just then the owl turned and looked at them. Then he talks about another kind of tongue, and I call it a getting into trouble tongue. He mentions in 12:13, "The wicked is snared by the transgression of his lips, but the just shall come out of trouble." Back when I was a little kid, we lived in Kamia, Idaho. My dad used to listen to the Sunday radio programs, usually religious ones. And I remember him listening to a Dr. DeHaan. And maybe some of you might remember that Sunday morning message too. But he said this about the tongue: "The most deadly member in the human body is the tongue. We can kick with our feet and strike with our fist, but neither can do as much damage as a loose tongue, because the bruise of a kick will heal. The black eye caused by a blow from a fist will clear up, but the words inflicted by unkind words, idle gossip, outright lying, and vicious slandering can never be completely healed." And a pastor once observed that some church members are like they lead a cat and dog life. They purr in the house of God and they growl at home. There are some wives out here this morning that I bet are just waiting to hear some good words from a careless husband. And imagine there are some husbands who are just waiting to hear some good words from a thoughtless wife. And I'm sure there are children just waiting to hear good words from mom or dad, or mom and dad. And I'm sure there are many in this congregation today who are desperately in need of an encouraging word. And I like the little witty saying. I've been collecting witty sayings all of my pastoral years and finding some that would fit in with my sermon for the day. And I really like this one: "Be kind, because everyone you meet is fighting a battle." Isn't that true? We all have our own problems. We all have our own trials. We all have our own difficulties. So when we come to church on Sabbath, we need to encourage each other and not tear each other down. And that leads me to point number three. The tongue, first of all, has power to delight. It has power to destroy. And thirdly, it has power to delight. James says about that, verse 9, "Therewith we bless God, even the Father, and therewith we curse men who are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not to be. Does a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter?" And now he makes two illustrations illustrating how the tongue can delight. And he compares it to a fresh fountain, a mountain spring. And I don't know if you are acquainted with this mountain spring up on Weston Mountain, where there's just bubbling water that comes up out of the ground, and they've actually put a pipe to so people could load up their jugs and water bottles and stuff. Comes so refreshing right out of the ground. My sister, Ruby Stafford, I don't know if any of you have met John and Ruby Stafford. Ruby's my sister, and Richard Kruger is my brother. They attend the Village Church. But John and Ruby go up on the mountain at least once a week to get water from this fresh spring up there. And it doesn't have, you know, all the additives that they put into our water to make it supposedly safe for us today. And then he compares it next to a fig tree. Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives? Or a vine, figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. If your tongue is used to praise, to pray, to proclaim, and to encourage, it will bear fruit, as the scripture says. Solomon also talks about a good tongue. Let's look at some of those proverbs. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those that deal truly are his delight. And it's so much easier, isn't it, to tell the truth than to tell a falsehood? In an age in which there's so much falsehoods going on. Heaviness in the heart of man makes it stoop, but a good word makes it glad. And have you ever had someone come up to you, either in the store or any place, and they say something nice to you? I was walking down one of the aisles of Walmart here not very long ago, and this little boy said, "I like the way you dress." And I think I had some tan slacks on and a shirt and a matching something, and he thought that was really cool. You know, that made my day. Just a simple little thing, like even a smile can do that when you meet somebody. And you know, I was criticized when I was taking theology in Walla Walla College because I smiled too much. I don't know why they told me that, but it was the chair of the theology department that sent me a letter and said, "You smile too much, Roger. You must be hiding something." Anyway, a smile can go a long ways too, besides good words. Then there's another proverb. A soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness is a breach in the spirit. Here compares a tongue that speaks good words. It's like a tree of life. It can bring hope and encouragement to people. That was Proverbs 15, 1 and 4. Proverbs 15, 23. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. Another one, pleasant words are as a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones. That's 16, verse 24. And then this one, I've always had a hard time picturing this in my mind, but you know, all know this one. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. Can you envision something like that? The way I do it is, my first car was a 55 Chevy convertible, and it had moon hubcaps on it, chromed hubcaps. Since then, I have seen some beautiful wheels that are chrome with gold, with little gold attachments to them. That's kind of what I picture and I see when I read this verse about apples of gold and pictures of silver. Here's what Paul has to say. Let all evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be kind to one another. It's a story about John Wesley. One time when he was preaching, he had put on a new tie. It was a bow tie, but it had two little tails hanging down like that. And I'd suppose we'd call it a Western tie today. Anyway, this lady, she didn't hear a word he said about Jesus or about the Bible. All she could do was thinking about that ugly-looking tie that he had with those two tassels hanging down. So she met him at the door when he was shaking hands with them as they came out. And she said, "Mr. Wesley, would you suffer a little criticism?" And he said, "Well, I suppose so." "Well," she said, "Mr. Wesley, your bow tie is too long, and it's an offense to me." And he said, "Well, do you have a pair of scissors?" And she says, "Yeah." So she got them out of her purse, and she handed it to him. And he says, "Well, here, you take them, and you fix them to the way you think it should be." So she cut them off, those two little things hanging down. And then he said, "Is that better?" She says, "Yeah, that's a lot better." Then he said, "Would you mind letting me have those scissors? And would you mind a little criticism?" And he says, "Your tongue is too long, and it offends me." "Stick it out, it will." Anyway, John Wesley must have had quite a sense of humor. Only a word of anger, but it wounded one sensitive heart. Only a word of sharp reproach, but it made the teardrops start. Only a hasty, thoughtless word, sarcastic and unkind, but it darkened the day before so bright and left a sting behind. Only a word of kindness, but it lightened one heart of its grief. Only a word of sympathy, but it brought one soul relief. Only a word of gentle cheer, but it flooded with radiant light the pathway that seemed so dark before, it made for a day more bright. I don't know how many of you have remember reading the First Settler story written by Will Carleton. It was an English assignment that I had when I was at Upper Columbia Academy. I think it was in English 4. And I haven't read it for a long time, but the story goes something like this, that this husband was very harsh with his wife, harsh words. And a number of times after milking the cow, she left the barn door open and the cow got out and wandered away. And he'd come home from work and he'd have to find it. Well, it was winter time, and he came home from work one day and here the barn door was open and the cow was gone. It was snowing. There was a storm. And he jumped on her with the most vicious of words and just put her down. Then he went and took a shower, and when he got out of his shower, he came out and his wife was gone. And he noticed that her wraps and her boots were gone. She'd gone out to look for the cow. She was gone all night. In the morning, he went out to find her. The cow never came home, and he found her dead in the snow, frozen to death. And the poem finishes with these words: "Boys flying kites haul in their white-winged birds, but you can't do that when you're flying words. Careful with fire is good advice, we know. Careful with words is 10 times doubly so. Thoughts unexpressed may sometimes fall back dead, but God himself can't kill them once they're said." So some of you still might be thinking, well, words really aren't that important. But listen to the words of Jesus in Matthew 12, 36 and 37. "Every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give an account of in the day of judgment. For by your words you shall be justified, and by your words you shall be condemned." Got to tell you this story. I was debating whether I should, if I'd have time or not. But the story goes of a teacher in New York City who one day decided to do something unusual with her senior high school class. And she would call each one of them up in front of the classroom, and then she would tell in front of all the other students what a contribution they had made to the class and how important they were to the class. One by one, she did that. And as each of them came up, she gave them a blue ribbon that says, "Who I am makes a difference." And then a few days had gone by, and she heard such wonderful things that the students, how it affected their lives. And she decided to do a class project to see what kind of an impact recognizing other people in the community would do, to do that kind of thing. So she gave each of the students three more blue ribbons that said that, "Who I am makes a difference." And she says, "I want you to go and pick somebody out and just honor them and then give them a ribbon." And then she says, "I want you to give them to others, because I want to see it kind of spread, how it'll mushroom and spread throughout the community." So one of the boys in the class went to a junior executive in a nearby company that had been a help to him in trying to decide what kind of work to go into. And he gave him a blue ribbon and put it on his shirt. And then he gave him two extra ribbons and told him, "We're doing a class project on recognition, and we'd like for you to go out and find somebody to honor and give him a blue ribbon. And then that one, the third one, I want you to give to somebody else." So later that day, this junior executive that had these two ribbons now went to the boss of his company, who was really a bull in a china closet. I mean, he was aggressive with words. He was unkind and uncouth with his people who worked for him. But he went with this ribbon to this executive, and he says, "You know, I want you to know I really admire you for being a creative genius." And his boss, you know, kind of was startled, looked back, and he says, "In fact, I want to honor you with this ribbon. It says, 'Who I am makes a difference.' You made a difference in the lives of us here." He didn't say what kind of difference. But you know, "You've been an important part of this business, and I just wanted to honor you. So I would like you to take this other ribbon that I have, and I want you to find somebody that you can give it to as well." So on the way home, driving from work, this senior executive, the CEO, was trying to think about who he could honor. When he got home, his 14-year-old son was sitting there in the living room, and his father went over to him and he says, "You know, the most incredible thing happened to me today. One of my junior executives came up to me and he told me how much he admired me for my creative genius, you know. And then he gave me a ribbon," he says, "to give to somebody else that I could honor. And then he said, and son, I just can't think of anybody else that I'd rather honor than you. I just, you know, I come home from work and I'm all stressed out, and I take it out on you. I tell you to go clean your room, and I tell you to go do your homework, and I just jump all over you, and I want you to know that I'm really sorry for that behavior." And then he said, "I want you to have this ribbon because I can't think of anybody else who is more important to me than your mother." He said, "You're the next most important to me in the world, and I love you, son." And the son broke out sobbing. He just sobbed and he sobbed. And his dad said, "What's the matter, son?" And he said, "Well, Dad, I just want you to know that before you came home tonight, I was in my room and I wrote a note telling you why I killed myself, because I didn't feel that I was important to you or Mom, and I just felt totally worthless in this world." And the father, he says, "I don't feel that way anymore. I'm so glad to hear from you, Dad." He says, "The note is up in my room. You can go take a look at it. You won't need it." So the father went up and looked at the letter, full of anguish and pain. And when he went back to work, he was a changed man. You better believe it. He treated his employees much better than he ever did before, and he was much more sensitive. And he made sure to tell all of his employees how he appreciated them and what a difference they'd made to the company. Just simple words can have such a powerful influence on people we come in contact with. So as we close, I wanted to have us sing a number 629 in the old hymnal, but some churches will still have the old hymnal in the racks too. But I just want to read a few words to you from that. And it's called, If Any Little Word of Mine. Do you remember that song? I wish it'd be in our new hymnal. But it goes kind of like this. If any little word of mine may make a dark life brighter, if any little song of mine might make a sad heart lighter, God, help me speak the helping word and sweeten it with singing and drop it in some lonely vale to set the echoes ringing. Well, we don't have that, so I'd like to have us sing next best, number 286 in our hymnal, Wonderful Words of Life. Sing them over again to me, Wonderful Words of Life. And these are words of scriptures, words from God, but the words that we use can also be words of life or words of death.